were with us last week, we had an introductory shir, and that was basically about dinim derabanan in general, and gzeiros and harchakos midrabanan. Where do the rabbis have a right to make an institution and to assume that the community has the obligation to follow their ideas and their institutions that came way after the Gemara was over, after the Chasimas HaTalmud? How far-reaching is their authority, and how much should we assume that we have an obligation to listen to them? So this is a question that we discussed last week, and this was basically something which is a very important issue because it touches on a lot of our minhagim and what their nature actually is and what their obligation is on our communities nowadays. So now let's get straight into our topic for today, and that is the topic of kitnius on Pesach. Kitnius is something that we are all aware of. Kitnius is something probably many of us have a difficult time dealing with, but at the same time, any svartim in the room? So, no svartim in the room. I was going to say, if you're a svarti, you can leave now, because it's totally not relevant to you. Lucky you. But basically, for us Ashkenazim, so we assume that kitnius is something which is a rabbinical decree. It came much later on in history, but yet, it's something we have accepted upon ourselves. So let's try to understand what exactly this is all about. My father, whenever he talks about Hilchos Matzah, whenever he begins to have his shiurim on Hilchos Pesach, he always points out, as my father is a master of doing, he shows us in how many different areas we find the same idea. We do have the opportunity to have many mitzvahs that are done that are performed with lechem, with bread. Of those, we find, let's say, most obviously is the mitzvah of matzah on Leil HaSeder. Many of us probably bake challah, so that is the mitzvah of hafrashas challah that is only done when you're baking lechem. Birchas HaMazon is a mitzvah midaraisa that you only do after you eat lechem as well. Chadash, as we know, many people are not so careful about chadash nowadays, but chadash is something that also we are careful about and has to do with lechem. Birchas HaMotzi we only recite when we eat bread. Netilas Yadayim we only do when we eat bread. Erev Chatzeros is very complicated, not for now, but is also something that needs to have bread. And also Paspalter. Now what is Paspalter? That is something we know there's a prohibition of Bishul Akum. You're not allowed to eat food that is cooked by a non-Jew. Yet, we are told that when you have bread that is baked by a non-Jew, you are allowed to eat that. So why is that? Shouldn't that be the same as Bishul Akum? Shouldn't that be the same as anything else that is cooked by a non-Jew, which is prohibited? So pas, bread, which is baked by a non-Jew, should also be prohibited in the same way that all other food items are prohibited as well. So the answer that the Shach suggests on Yerudea is because al halechem levado yichya ha'adam, because this is considered a staple of life. And in those days, the only people who were bakers were the non-Jews. So what are you going to tell us? We're not allowed to eat anything that's baked by a non-Jew. Then what are we going to live on? What are we going to eat? And therefore, we would assume that we are allowed to eat the bread that is baked by a non-Jew. So we have many different places where bread is the determining factor for a given mitzvah or a given iser or gzeira. Now, not always is that exactly the same. Not always do we assume that bread is going to be the same bread that works for everything. So over here, let's zero in, let's focus in on the mitzvah of achilas matzah, and let's see what does the Gemara assume is acceptable for my matzah on the night of the Seder, which will lead us directly into the issue of kidneys, as we will see. So let's see, the Gemara tells us there are very few items that can be used in order to produce matzah that is acceptable for Leil HaSeder. Says the Gemara as follows, this is in Psachim Daf Lamed Hei, it's really a Mishnah there, and the Gemara expounds upon it. Elu Dvarim, says the Mishnah, these are the items Shadam Yotzeh Behem Yedei Chalvasa BePesach. These are the only items, and I apologize for anyone who was at Rabbi Bilitz here yesterday. How many women go from here? So I saw his source sheet. He also spoke about kidneys. We'll see if we overlap. Rabbi Bilitz is more of a history man, so he probably had a lot more to say than I do. So we'll see. So let's see. You thought what?
No, I said it was funny when I saw it.
Okay, so you can give the shear. So the Mishnah says, Hamsachem Daf Lamed Hei. These are the only items that can be used in order to have acceptable matzah on Leil HaSeder. And what are those? Chitim, seorim, wheat, and barley. Those are obviously two different items that can be used and must be used. Kuspin, shipon, and shibol shul. Anyone know what those are? No, it's spelt. Spelt. So it's oats, rye, and spelt. So if you have wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt, those are the only five items that can be used to bake our matzahs that are acceptable for the Leil HaSeder for our mitzvah. And the Gemara there picks up on this Mishnah and says, really? You mean to tell me these are the only five items that can be used to make your matzahs that are going to be used for the night of the Seder? What about rice, asked the Gemara. Can't we have rice flour? I assume we have such a thing in our community. Can't we have other kinds of flours that can also be used? Why aren't those acceptable for the mitzvah on Leil HaSeder of eating matzah? Very simple question. Says the Gemara. For those of us who learn Gemara, I don't know how many do or do not, but in Hebrew, the letters Aleph Yud Nun means what? Ein, means no. In Aramaic, which the Gemara is written in, the letters Aleph Yud Nun means in, yes. So it's exactly the opposite. So you always have to keep in mind what you're reading. So here, what? It's not good. Okay. So the Gemara says as follows. Hani in, you mean to tell me only these five items, yes, these are the only five that can be used for the mitzvah of matzah on Leil HaSeder. However, orez v'dochen lo, if I have rice, orez is rice, and dochen is what? Millet. Right? So if I have rice or millet that is made into flour, I cannot use those for my mitzvah of matzah on Leil HaSeder. Really, is that true? Minahani mili. Why should that be the case? This is flour and that's flour. The same way I make flour out of wheat, I make flour out of rice. It turns out to be the same powdery substance. Why can't I use that to make my matzah on the night of the Seder? Says the Gemara as follows. Amar Reb Shimon ben Lakish, v'chein tana devei Rabbi Shmuel, v'chein tana devei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So there are many who say the same thing. Amar Kra. Because the Pasuk, when it tells us about our obligation of eating matzah and about not eating chametz during Pesach, we are told as follows. Amar Kra, lo sochal alav chametz. One is not allowed to eat chametz on the night of the Seder or for the duration of Pesach. Shivas yamim tochal alav matzos. We have two halachas that are said, one right next to the other. And that is, number one, you're not allowed to eat chametz for the duration of Pesach. And number two, you must eat matzah on the night of the Seder. And the Gemara learns from the fact that these two halachas are put one right next to the other, we learn the following. Dvarim habayim lidei chimutz. The only thing that's acceptable for matzah on the night of the Seder is something which has the potential, if you would leave it long enough, to become chametz. Okay? So the only item that can be used that's acceptable for the night of the Seder is something which, if I wasn't careful in baking it, if I left it for 20 minutes, for 30 minutes, for 40 minutes, it would have become chametz. That is something that now can be used as matzah. But something which never has the potential to become chametz in its existence would not be able to be used for the mitzvah of matzah on the Leil HaSeder. And therefore, you can have rice flour, and you can leave it as long as you want, and you can cover it up with a napkin, with a towel, and you can soak it in hot water and everything. It will never be able to become for chametz. What do you call that? Ferment is not the right word. We don't use leaven nowadays. It will never rise properly to become like real chametz, and therefore the Gemara tells us that would not be an acceptable item for the night of the Seder because it would not be able to be used, it would never be able to become chametz even if you left it as long as you want. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now, just by parenthetically, this is a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us over here that we have a similarity between number one, not eating chametz, and number two, the mitzvah to eat matzah. Are those really similar? When do we have a prohibition to eat chametz? All the days of Pesach, 7 days of Pesach. When do we have an obligation to eat matzah? Just the Seder night. So they're not really the same. Why don't you say that after the Seder night is over, if I don't have an obligation to eat matzah, so then you're allowed to eat chametz? Well, the Torah tells us clearly that you're not allowed to. But if these two halachas are really similar, so how are they similar? If we only have an obligation to eat matzah on the night of the Seder, it would seem that it's a little bit off. So the Vilna Gaon, from this Gemara, he comes up with something very interesting. He comes up with a basic new concept, and that is what he calls a mitzvah harishus. Now, it's really a contradiction in terms. My father always points out, what is the definition of a mitzvah? Mitzvah, the shorish is? Tzivui. It's something that I'm commanded to do. You must do it. It's not an opportunity that maybe you can do it if you want. If you don't want, you don't have to. No, a mitzvah means you have an obligation. That's a tzivui. That's what it means to be an Eved Hashem, is that he told me to do something and I must follow what he said. At the same time, the Vilna Gaon says we have this new category called a mitzvah harishus. You have an optional mitzvah. What does that mean? If it's optional, it means it's not a commandment. And if it's a commandment, it's not optional. So the Vilna Gaon says, no, we have every now and then commandments which are optional, which means if you do them, you get extra brownie points, whatever that means. If you don't do them, you don't get punished. So, on the night of the Seder, we have a mitzvah, an obligation. Everybody must eat matzah on the night of the Seder. For the duration of Pesach, says the Vilna Gaon, we have an opportunity to perform a mitzvah harishus, and the more matzah one eats over the duration of Pesach, the more enhanced of a mitzvah of the more stomachache you might have, but the more enhanced of a mitzvah of matzah you might have as well from that. And that's what the Vilna Gaon comes up with, this new category called a mitzvah harashus, which is something that is a very surprising kind of concept. And it's something that many achronim discuss after the Vilna Gaon as well. Maybe there are other mitzvahs that fall into the category as well. Rav Soloveitchik suggested maybe, you know, there are many who ask the question, if we have a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, how could it be that throughout all the generations, there were so many wonderful people who weren't worried about living in Eretz Yisrael? How did they neglect this mitzvah? If they're so careful about everything else, why weren't they careful about then? So at the time that it was dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael, we understand. You don't have to give up your life to live in Israel. But how come at a time, let's say now, when it's not dangerous, how come we don't all live there? So you can say because we're not so careful about everything else, or we're not careful about that either. But for those who are very careful, it is a question. For those great tzaddikim, how come they were never careful? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested maybe the reason why is because living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah harashus. It's something that you have an opportunity to do. It's something that's maybe not a definite and absolute chiyuv, even though it's hard to swallow such a thing, because as we know, throughout Chumash, Eretz Yisrael is spoken about in such glowing terms, and it's talked about so often, and it's something that seems to be on the height of our consciousness, so why is it that we would assume it's a mitzvah harashus? Okay, but this is maybe perhaps the reason why we don't all follow that, because it's not a definite obligation, it's something which we would call a mitzvah harashus, an opportunity that we have to perform a mitzvah if we are able to, but if we're not, we are not violating anything in principle. So this is a very important Gemara, and based on this assertion that the Vilna Gaon has, he says that even though generally on Yom Tov we don't have Shalashudas, we only have Shalashudas on Shabbos, he says that on the last day of Pesach, many have the practice to eat Shalashudas on the last day of Pesach. Why? Because you want to get in the last opportunity to eat matzah. And since you want to have the last opportunity to eat matzah, many of us might not think this way, but the Vilna Gaon did, and therefore he said we have this idea of taking the last opportunity we have and eating Shalashudas on the last day of Pesach. So this is basically all stemming from our Gemara, but the most important thing to remember from this Gemara is that the only items that are acceptable for the baking of the matzah that we can use on the night of the Seder are items which would be able to potentially become chametz if we don't watch them carefully enough. However, an item which would never be able to turn into chametz, that is something that cannot be used for the baking of the matzah. So, you stop right here, you say, well, the Gemara tells us rice is allowed to be consumed on Pesach. No? What? The Gemara doesn't differentiate between Svardim and Ashkenazim. The Gemara says, since we know that rice cannot be used for the matzah, therefore rice is not considered chametz at all, and therefore rice would be totally permissible on Pesach. You look a little further, after the Gemara was finished, we read the Rambam. When did the Rambam live? The 10th century. So you look at the Rambam here, he says in Perek Hei, from Hilchos Chametz and Matzah Halacha Aleph, that's number Beis on the sheet, Ein Aser Mishum Chametz BePesach. There is nothing wrong with eating what is considered part of the violation of eating chametz on Pesach, says the Rambam. Ela chameshes mine hadagam bilvad. It's only these five items that the Gemara said. Again, because the only five items that can be used for baking the matzah are something which could ultimately turn into chametz. And since only those five are on the list, it means everything else can be consumed on Pesach and would not be considered part of the category of chametz. And therefore the Rambam says, Vehein. Shnei mini achitim shem achita v'akusemes u'shloshes mini haseorim shehen haseora v'hashibolashua v'hashipon. Aval, says the Rambam, ha-kidneyos, if you have kidneyos which are like kegon orez v'dochen u'pulim v'adashim, if you have rice or millet, or if you have pulim v'adashim, means all kinds of beans, u'chayotza behem, ein behem yishem chametz, says the Rambam, we never heard of that being considered chametz at all. I don't know where this comes from, says the Rambam. Ela afilu lash kemach ores, says the Rambam. Even if I go and I grind up my rice and I make it into flour, uchayotze b'beroschem, and I put it into burning hot water and I let it sit there and bubble over, v'kiseu b'vigadim, which is the same way we would do it now. You cover it over with a towel, with a napkin, whatever it is to let it rise, ad shenitfach, until it starts to crack a little bit on the surface. Kemo batzek shehichmetz, the same way you would do for any other loaf of bread that you're baking. Hareza muter ba'achila, says the Rambam, that is considered permissible to eat on Pesach. Why? She'ein zechimutz ela sirchon. Because it never gets far enough along in the process of chametz in order to be considered chametz on Pesach. Yes, it does crack, and it looks a little similar to the way wheat flour might look if we put it in boiling hot water, but it never gets far enough into the process to be considered chametz, and therefore he says that would be completely permissible on Pesach. So, already in the 10th century, which is way after the Gemara, we still have no idea that there's such an institution of of kidneys. And the Rambam totally rejects this, and this is the reason why in the days of the Rishonim we don't find anything. It comes as a later institution. And this is what we discussed last week. When a later institution is put into play, what obligation do we have to follow it? The Rambam tells us that the only time that all of the Jewish people have an obligation to follow any rabbinic institution is if it was instituted in the times of the Gemara, because they had an authoritative body, they had the authority over the entire Jewish people. But nowadays, where we can't even consider one rabbi to be the rabbi of an entire community, everyone says, no, I don't trust him, and I don't listen to them, and I don't listen to that one. You're lucky if you find somebody who trusts his own rabbi, let alone considering trusting somebody else's rabbi. So nowadays, says the Rambam, we do not have an opportunity anymore to institute new ideas and expect that other communities outside of our own will have to follow us. So this is something that was a major point of discussion at the times of the Rishonim, as we'll see in a couple of minutes. So why is it that we came up with this idea of kidneys? Where does it come from? So we find two basic reasons for this prohibition. Reason number one that's given is because, well, when you have a rice field and we harvest the rice, not always do we assume that the rice is going to be in a separate continent. It's not always going to be, the crop is not always going to be somewhere totally separate from the wheat and the barley. And therefore there's an assumption that probably the rice and the wheat and the barley are going to grow near each other. When we harvest the wheat and the barley, we're also going to harvest the rice. So there are going to be some particles of wheat and barley that are going to get mixed into the rice production as well. And therefore we have that consideration when it comes to Pesach, and we're going to outlaw all of the consumption of rice on Pesach because maybe there's some wheat or barley that is mixed in. That is one consideration, which I would say probably nowadays is so far-fetched. As we know, imagine if you have a rice company that claims to be gluten-free, and there's somebody who's highly allergic to gluten and now goes ahead and buys that rice, and it turns out that there's some wheat in there, it would probably be sued and they would be shut down, yeah?
But that's not so, because it's the whole thing with the genetically modified products that the farmers are complaining that the genetically modified products are affecting their regular crops. So there is crossover.
Right, so there is some sort of crossover. The question is, what kind of crossover is it? And that's a big question. Should we really assume that there are pieces of wheat inside of our rice? I mean, somebody was here at the shir last night and told me that they have a Sephardi friend. I don't know if this is true, but this is what they said. It's a woman that I trust, so it could be what she said is correct. It just might be a mistake. But she said that she has a Sephardi friend who uses rice on Pesach, because the Sephardim have never accepted this idea of kidneys on Pesach. But her Sephardi friend sift through all of it to make sure that there's no wheat in there. So I don't know where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where that comes from, because nowadays when we know that there is absolutely no probability, no possibility of having any pieces of wheat or barley in there, as we know, if anybody is gluten-free and they went ahead and bought this rice and then there was wheat in there, the company would be sued and shut down. So that's something which obviously is a beautiful chumrah for Pesach. As we know, we have many different chumras on Pesach, but again, I'm not sure if it's absolutely necessary to do. While we're on the topic of chumras on Pesach, you know, I'm already getting a lot of Pesach questions. And people have all sorts of questions, and somehow, I don't know, we're making Pesach for the first time this year. We don't have that many questions. Somehow, as people go on, they come up with more and more questions every year. And the questions keep on getting more and more original and more interesting as the years go on. What? Should go to Rabbi Bilich here. You know, somebody asked me about koshering their teeth for Pesach. I said, sure, you should take a blowtorch. It's the best way to kosher your teeth. So it's very important that we make sure that even though chumras on Pesach are something that we take very seriously, and chumras on Pesach are things that are passed down from generation to generation, but to keep in mind as well, you know, I saw a beautiful story from the Oy Yisrael. The Oy Yisrael was the Apter Rav. He was one of the great Hasidic Rebbes. He was a Talmud of the Noam Elimelech, Rabbi Elimelech Milizhensk. And the story goes that every year he had so many chumras when it came to baking his matzahs for Pesach. And he wouldn't accept this and he wouldn't accept that, and it took him forever till he baked them, because every time a matzah came out of the oven, he would inspect it and look so carefully. He would say, no, this is not good, that's not good. He would throw it out and give it to someone else. Until he finally got himself a kosher box of matzahs that he held was good enough for his Seder, it took him a very long time. So he comes home with this box of matzahs, and everybody knew, you got to be careful. And his wife that year, a couple of days before Pesach, his wife was manning the house, getting ready for Pesach, and an ani comes to the door and he says, you know, Rebbetzin, I don't have any matzahs for the Seder this year, maybe you can spare a few. So she says, sure, we have an extra box of matzahs. She goes ahead and gives away her husband's box. and gives it to the Ani, not realizing that that was the box of matzahs that were supposed to be used for the night of the Seder. And she finally realizes after he left, I can't believe I just did it. He comes home and she tells her husband, by the way, I feel terrible, but somebody came to the door today and wanted a box of matzahs. He says he doesn't have any food for Pesach. I gave him your box of matzahs that you slaved away so hard. And he says, thank you so much. Now we're going to have the most amazing Pesach. Let me go out and buy an extra box of matzahs. And his wife was astounded. She said, now what do you mean? You worked so hard to make these matzahs. I thought you were going to get angry at me. He said to her, I want you to know that more serious than having a piece of chametz in my house over Pesach is to have one piece of anger in my heart over Pesach. And it's an amazing story. And his yard site happens to be this week. I think it's not coincidental. Before Pesach, we should remind ourselves of this story, that it's a very hectic time, and we all have chumras, and we all have things that we want to be careful about, but at the same time to remember that more important than having a piece of chametz in our house, one little crumb on the floor, more important than that is not to have a crumb of anger in our minds or in our hearts, and not to get angry and not to get a temper, and not to feel upset about certain things that might go wrong or that might not be exactly the way we want it. We should always keep that story of the Apter-Rav in mind. So here we have, back to where we started, here we have this new idea of kidneys. Did Rabbi Billet say that story yesterday? No. Okay, so far so good. What? He'll like that story? Okay. Okay, I'll pass it on to the men. Okay. So here we have the institution of kidneys on Pesach. I just want to make sure that the shiur is worth it for those who went yesterday. I got to say something extra. It's different. Okay. I hope so. So, thank you. So here we have kidneys on Pesach. Number one, the reason why they instituted kidneys on Pesach is because there was a concern that when we harvest the rice, we're going to perhaps have some kernels of grain that are going to get mixed up in that as well. So it's a real consideration that maybe there's going to be real chametz in what you're baking. And the problem number two goes as follows. Problem number two is that when you crush it up and you make it into flour, or when you make oatmeal, it looks very similar to when you make rice meal. And therefore the concern is maybe somebody's going to walk by and somebody's going to see that you made something that looks like oatmeal. They're going to say, oh, it must be that there's no problem of making oatmeal on Pesach. And it's going to lead us to have another problem. It's going to lead us to people perhaps baking or cooking chametz on Pesach. Okay, so far so good. Thank you. Okay, so now let's go a little bit further. So when did this actually come up? When did this come about? So let's look in the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is the Shulchan Aruch, and he writes in Siman Tuf Nun Gimel, that's Hilchos Pesach, he tells us basically the development of the Isser of Kidneys. And what you see from this Beis Yosef, what's fascinating about it is that it was not unanimously accepted. As we know, half of the Jewish people, all the Sfardim, didn't accept it, but forgetting about the Sfardim, at the time when it was trying to get off the ground, there was a major pushback, and rightfully so. Who wants to have the more Isurim of chametz on Pesach? We have enough. And I think what's interesting to think about, Rav Asher Weiss told me something very, very noteworthy recently. He told me something which is I've never thought about, and he said most people don't think about it, but it's worth thinking about. Think about what Pesach was like before kidneys. So nowadays it's easy for us to think about because nowadays we have everything that looks like chametz and Pesach is so easy. But think about our grandparents who only ate potatoes and carrots on Pesach and matzah and that was it. Imagine if they were also able to have kidneys on Pesach. Can you imagine what it looked like? So you see how the revolution totally changed this, what Pesach looks like forevermore. And this comes up in so many different areas of halacha. Think about, take for example, the Anshei Knesset HaGadol at the end of the period of the Bayis Sheni were the ones who instituted Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu. They were the ones who made the Nusach of Shemona Esrei as we know it. Before they came about, there was no Shemona Esrei. We had no such thing. So what was our obligation of davening every day? The Rambam says, we have an obligation to say one tefillah once a day, doesn't say what time. So you can wake up in the morning and say, God, thank you so much for allowing me to wake up and for making me healthy. Or, before you go to sleep, you can say one sentence and say, God, thank you so much for giving me a great day, or I'm upset that you gave me a horrible day. Hopefully tomorrow will be better. Or I have a very difficult time sleeping at night. Can you please make sure that you give me an opportunity to sleep tonight? You can say one line of a tefillah and that was it. You fulfilled your obligation of davening to Hashem. That was it. Anshei Knesset HaGadol came along and said, no. We got to make something that's institutionalized. And now they came up with a Shemona Esrei, with a Psukah Dezimra, with a before davening, after davening, and everything. And we got to daven with a minyan. Rav Asher Weiss pointed out, so before they came around, there was no shul. Can you imagine your life with no shul? I hope the answer is no. That's an amazing phenomenon. That the Jewish community was not a community. There was no shul. It was each man for himself, each woman for herself. You got up in the morning, you said your little tefillah, you went out to work, and that was it. You never got together to do anything. Once a year, you got together for the Rabbi Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. Once a year, you got together, Aliyah LeRegel, three times a year, you went to the Beis HaMikdash. But outside of that, there was nothing. That was the entire institution of tefillah. And now we have an institution of shuls, which changed the context of the Jewish people forever. So amazing. In their foresight, Rav Asher Weiss suggested, maybe it's because in their foresight they understood that there's no longer going to be a communal place of Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be destroyed, and we better figure out how are we going to make sure to keep a community together. We're not going to have those opportunities to go up and be Ola Regal anymore. So what are we going to do to make sure that the community sticks together? What we do is we institute davening, and we institute the idea of shuls, and now we're going to have a close-knit community because everyone is forced to come together to daven. You think also about what was the experience of Shabbos before the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? There was no such thing as muktzah. And the Gemara tells us that doing business on Shabbos is not prohibited. There's nothing wrong with doing business on Shabbos. That's something that came along later on. Why? The Chachamim said you're not allowed to do business on Shabbos because we're concerned. Maybe you're going to write something down. You're going to write, you came to my store and bought X. You're going to write out a receipt or something like that. But if you're strictly going and paying with money and they're giving you an item, something of that nature, there's no problem at all. So think about it. What did Shabbos used to look like? Generally, most of the people worked in the fields. They were in agriculture or they were in building. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to build. You're not allowed to plow the fields. So they took off on Shabbos. And what did? They flooded the markets. On Shabbos, that's what everybody did. They went shopping on Shabbos. What else are you going to do on Shabbos? Can you imagine if Shabbos looked like that? So you think about the way Chazal totally changed the face of Shabbos, totally changed the face of minyan, of community, and here they totally changed the face of what Pesach looks like as well. Something to consider. Every time we talk about a takana medirabanan, think about what it was like beforehand. And think about how much they changed the Jewish community. Rav Asher Weiss pointed out that this is the reason why he said that Rabbi Yaakov Emden asked, there was only a period, a very short period in between the destruction of the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. And we're told that Ezra and Nehemiah came along and they wanted everybody to come back to do Aliyah, to come back to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Nobody was willing to go because intermarriage was rampant. Most of the Jewish people were intermarried. How could it be in a span of 70 years, everybody intermarried? How did that happen? The answer is because there was nothing keeping them. If it's each man for himself, how long can that last? You have no shuls, you have no Beis HaMikdash, you have nothing keeping the people together. So everybody's making decisions on their own, deciding what Judaism should look like. And there's no one focal point where everybody is able to connect themselves to, and therefore everything fell apart in a span of 70 years. You look later in history, in Russia, the same thing happened. What do? They shut down our schools, they shut down the shuls, and in 70 years, the whole community was gone. The whole Jewish community was gone. Why? It's the same thing, because if every man is going to be for himself and there's not going to be any longer a community, that's it. We have nothing that's going to keep us connected. So it's just an interesting thing to consider. It's a historical fact, but it's probably true. So let's see what the Beis Yosef says. At the time that Kidneyus was getting underway, it did not go off so easily. Not everybody accepted it. Says the Beis Yosef, Yesh osrim lechol orez v'chol mine Kidneyus. Says the Beis Yosef, there are those who had this idea of saying that you're not allowed to eat kidneys on Pesach, you're not allowed to eat beans, you're not allowed to eat rice on Pesach. V'chumra yisera hizu, says the Beis Yosef. This is an extremely big chumra. Gam Rabbeinu Yerucham kasav, Rabbeinu Yerucham, one of the Rishonim, writes as well, Osam shenagu, those people that have the practice, shalo lechol orez amini kidneys mavushal bePesach, Minog Shtusu, says the Rabbeinu Yerucham. It's a silly practice. I mean, where do they come up with this idea? Don't we know the Gemara tells us clearly that the only things that are considered chametz, the only things that are considered to be prohibited on Pesach are these five items. But anything out of that, there's no problem at all. So says Rabbeinu Yerucham, this is a minhag shtus. This is something that is silly. It's something that has no basis. It has no found ground in halacha. And he assumes that there would be no reason to assume that kidneys would be asur on Pesach. Zulasi, except imhei mosim lahachmer al atzmam. If a person wants to take on a personal chumra for themselves and say, you know what, I don't want to get involved, I don't want to make any mistakes, fine, that's your own prerogative, you could do that. But lo yadati lama, I don't know where this comes from to say that we should make a far-reaching takana that everybody is prohibited from having kidneys on Pesach. And he goes on and on and on, and basically he writes that there is really no reason to asur kidneys, and he says maybe you have the two reasons that we discussed, either because some chametz particles are going to get mixed into the produce of the rice. Or perhaps you can say the reason why is because we're going to mix up the oatmeal with the rice cereal and something of that nature. But again, he vacillates, he goes back and forth, and he's not sure exactly where this comes from. You look at the very last line, and he says, V'gam b'mardachai kasa b'perakol shah b'shem hasmak. The Mardachai quotes this as well in the name of the Sefer Mitzvah Sakatan. V'leis dechash lidvarim halalu zulasi ha'ashkenazim. And there is nobody who cares about this whole institution except for Nebuch the Ashkenazim. That's the way the Beis Yosef ends off. And the Ramah, who's a gloss on the Beis Yosef, comments, and he says, Anu b'nei Ashkenaz, we, the Ashkenazic Jews who live in Germany, no gula achmir, we have taken this upon ourselves, even though the Beis Yosef says that there was so much disagreement at the time as to whether or not we should come up with this idea, but says the Ramah, we have taken this upon ourselves, and therefore we have the chumrah of kidneys. It went so far as to say the Chumas Hadeshin, who is basically the sefer that the Ramah bases much of his psak halacha off of. He was one of the greatest gedolim in Germany, German Jewry, before the Ramah was printed. So the Chumas Hadeshin even goes so far, he says, somebody asked him, now that the B'nai Ashkenaz, now that the German Ashkenazic communities have taken upon themselves that they are going to be machmir on kidneys on Pesach, do we have to go so far as to get rid of it and not have it in our homes over Pesach? This was the question that was raised to the Chumash Hadeshin. What do you think? No, why not? It's not chametz. So if it's not chametz, why can't you eat it? So you're saying there's a middle ground. You can't eat it, but you're allowed to have it. Well, says the Chumash Hadeshin, you're correct. You're not wrong, devil's advocate. The Chumash Hadeshin says you're right. He says, Inhu achli va'anal lo mashinam. Those wonderful Jews, the Svardim, are sitting there eating their rice on Pesach, and you're going to tell me I have to burn mine? So to tell me I should be machmir or not eat it is one thing, but to tell me I got to get rid of it, I'm not allowed to have it in my house on Pesach, that's a little too far. That's like making two different religions. That's saying that these people are allowed to eat it, and you got to burn it, that's too extreme. And therefore he says that there's nothing wrong at all with having the kidneys in your house on Pesach. The only prohibition is to eat and to consume the kidneys on Pesach itself. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who came much later on, his father was the Chacham Tzvi, and he writes later on in history that even though the Ashkenazim did accept this upon themselves, and even though the Ashkenazim assumed that kidneys is something that's worthy of taking upon themselves, he says his father, the Chacham Tzvi, thought it was crazy. It was something that was so outlandish, it was so extreme, and he did not want to accept this at all. And in fact, the Chacham Tzvi is quoted here as saying, you look on the bottom of the page, if I had enough strength, I would get rid of this whole institution of kidneys. It's just ridiculous, he says. I would get rid of this awful minig that we have taken upon ourselves of kidneys because it is a chumra that ultimately will come to a kula. Now what does that mean? A kula means you're going to end up coming to be more lenient than you otherwise would have. Why? Ofen matzos harbe, listen to this consideration. Because you're not allowed to have all these kinds of rices and kidneys on Pesach, so we're concerned, what are you going to eat? All you're going to eat is matzah. Now you're going to have a big stomach ache, but outside of that, you're going to have to make so many matzahs in order to provide for your family, you're going to be in such a rush, you're maybe going to make a mistake when you bake the matzahs, and you're going to make real chametz to get matzahs. So had we allowed you to have the rice and to have all these other things, you wouldn't be so nervous, you would only make the matzahs that you need, and that would be it. But says the Chacham Tzvi, I'm concerned that because we don't allow you to go ahead and eat all these items, now you're going to have a crunch, now you're going to feel that you need to have more matzahs, and because of that, you're not going to be scrupulous, you're not going to be careful about the way you bake your matzahs, and you're going to come to make them chametz. So this is something that you see, even later on in history, even after the Ramah said already that kidneys is something that we accepted, and even after the whole Ashkenazi community is very careful about kidneys, but still, there were those who felt that this is something that we should not accept. This is something we should get rid of. So this is a very important point to think about. Now, the Chayyadam points out that even though Ashkenazi communities have taken upon themselves that we do not eat kidneys on Pesach and we're careful not to cook kidneys on Pesach, however, the Chayyadam says if you have a Shas Hadchak, for example, you have somebody who's sick and who cannot eat other items, obviously they are allowed to eat kidneys on Pesach. That is certainly the case. Now, why is that? Because when the whole institution came about, they never said it for somebody who's sick and has nothing else to eat. So how big of a Shas Hadchak does it have to be? Okay, you have to ask a Shaila. You have to ask a Shaila about how much of a Shas Hadchak does it have to be, but that is certainly the halacha on Pesach. Now you think about as well, let's say a person, Rabbi Avadi Yosef talks about it, and he says, Let's say a person is an Ashkenazi, marries into a Sephardic family, the opposite of your case. So I marry into a Sephardic family, and now my in-laws, I want to be there for Pesach, the whole family is going to be together, and I'm the only one who's not going to be able to eat. So that's the question, what should I do? So I'm obviously not allowed to eat the kidneys that they're serving, but what about the pots that they cooked in that now have blias of kidneys? So Rav Avadi Yosef is a Sephardi, so he believes, well, kidneys is no problem in the first place, so what's the problem? Okay, very nice. However, my father felt that Rav Avadi Yosef is a little too makel when it comes to this. So again, my father feels, if it's extenuating circumstances, for example, your in-laws or everyone is getting together and you're the only one that's not going to be able to eat anything, then obviously you're allowed to go. However, if it's just a neighbor that's being nice and inviting you over, there's nothing wrong with saying to them, look, I'm an Ashkenazi, you're a Sephardi, it won't make you feel bad, it won't make me feel bad, I'm Pesach, I'm sorry, we won't be able to join each other because I can't eat at your house because you bake, you cook with pots that are used with kidneys.
But it's not chametz, and with regard to selling, you don't sell your kidney out then because it's not chametz.
Correct, no.
So you segregate it, but you don't sell it.
Right.
So why wouldn't they be able to eat on those pots?
So that's a great question. So that leads us right into our next point. And the next point goes as follows. The Ramah says, what happens, take for example, what happens during the year, thank you, what happens during the year when I have a big pot of chicken soup, and we know it's fleishig, there's chicken in there, and some milk spills inside. So what do I do? Batel. Now how much do I need to outweigh, to counterbalance the milk that fell in? Shishim. So you need 60 times the amount. So you have a big pot of soup, of course it's going to be 60 times the amount. Now, let's say I have a big tray, a piece of meat falls in, what do? Take it out. Right? So again, the reason why we say that is because the only time you can do bittul is when it gets mixed into the mixture and you cannot find it any longer. If it's be'en, if it's still there and you see it, so you have to take it out. But the only time bittul applies is when you have a big mixture and you cannot find any longer the treifa item that fell into the mixture. So we say generally that you need shishim, you need 60 times as much. That's a rabbinic idea. Biblically, we assume bittul barov. All you need is a majority. So that's always going to be the case. You always have a little bit of milk spills in, you always have a majority against the little bit of milk that falls in. Says the Rama, because kidneys is such a shaky institution in the first place, and because it was not accepted by everyone in the first place, and because even the Ashkenazim who accept it assume that it's not considered like real chametz, therefore, says the Rama, if some kidneys falls into your soup on Pesach, we would assume that you do not need 60 times as much to get rid of the kidneys that falls in. All you need is rove. All you need is a majority, which you always have. You have a couple of pieces of rice that fall in, and now you puree the soup, and you have a whole mixture together. There would be nothing to be concerned about, says the Rama, in Tufnun Gimel and Hilchos Pesach. It would be considered a kosher Pesach soup that you're allowed to eat on Pesach itself, because it is batel barov. And why are we so lenient? Why do we assume that all you need is rove? Again, because kidneys is something which is not chametz. Kidneys is something which is so shaky in the first place, why or if at all we accept it, and therefore the Rama says, there's nothing wrong at all if that falls into the soup. Now, lechatchila, you're not allowed to go and put it into the soup. That's what we call eim evatlan isur lechatchila. The same way you're not allowed to take milk and specifically pour it into your chicken soup during the year, so too you're not allowed to go ahead and lechatchila put some rice into your soup on Pesach. That would be the same halacha. Let me just finish this point, then we'll get to your question. So what would be the halacha, let's say, with the pots that I have cooked kidneys in? So what would you do with something like that? My father, I remember, one year on Pesach, there was somebody who called the house on Chol HaMoed Pesach, and he was such a good father. Not my father, he was, but he is. But this other guy was trying to be such a good father, and his wife had to go out. I think she was a nurse or whatever it was, so she had to go out one night of Chol HaMoed. And he was home with the kids, and he decided, what am I going to do to give the kids a Chol HaMoed treat? What can I give them for dinner? So I went to come up with his idea, but his idea was to give them corn on the cob. Great idea. So as every absent-minded husband who doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing on Pesach or in his wife's kitchen, the answer is stay out of the kitchen. But he didn't do that. So he goes ahead and takes his wife's Pesach pot on Chol HaMoed Pesach, and he cooks the corn on the cob, and he's all excited to give his kids this treat on Pesach. And the kids don't realize, and they eat it. And then his wife comes home and sees there are little particles of corn in the pot. And she says, what's going on here? He says, well, I made corn on the cob last night for the kids. She says, you crazy? What are you making corn on the cob? You're trafing out my kitchen. She said, a lot more than that. And they called my father to ask him, what do they do? So there was like literally smoke coming out of the phone. We heard it and we felt it. And the question was, what do you do? So the answer is, the pot is not traf. The pot is not traf because this is not chametz, as you said. All you have to do is wait 24 hours until 24 hours has passed since you cooked that corn. After 24 hours, we assume that any taste that is inside of the pot is not really considered relevant. It's not going to help out the cooking that you're doing now, and therefore we would assume there's no problem at all. During the year, why don't we say the same thing? If I have a treifa pot, why don't I just wait 24 hours and then say everything's kosher? What? What's the difference? But if you assume after 24 hours that the taste of the corn is not going to come out anymore, then how come during the year, if I have a pot that's treif, why don't you assume after 24 hours nothing's going to come out anymore either? The answer is we do assume that. But we have exera eino ben yamo, ato ben yamo, which means, who's really going to keep in mind where we're up to? You're keeping track. It's 24 hours. It's 36 hours. It's a day. It hasn't been a day yet. So because we're concerned that you're going to get all confused, meaning in the times of Chazal, it used to be they had one set of pots. They had one set of pots. And they waited 24 hours between cooking milchiks and cooking fleishiks, and that was fine. There was no reason to kasher in between. But since we have a concern that maybe eino ben yomo ato ben yomo, you're going to start getting confused. You put a sticker on the pot that says, I cooked at 7:30 in the morning. Then the sticker is going to get unstuck and go into the other pot, and everything's going to get mixed up. So you know what they said? Forget it. Now we're going to assume that eino ben yomo ato ben yomo. We have to make sure that any pot that was used, even if it was more than 24 hours ago, you have to go ahead and make sure not to use it again unless you kasher it. However, when it comes to kidneyus on Pesach, since kidneyus on Pesach is so shaky in the first place, since kidneyus on Pesach, even if you accept it, it was never accepted to be like real chametz, therefore we assume that the pot does not become treif, and once 24 hours has passed, the pot is allowed to be used without even going through a koshering process. Yeah. So the question that was asked is, Chametz on Pesach is considered b'mashehu, which means, generally during the year, even if you have some milk that spills into a soup, we assume once it's batel, once it's 60 times as much, it's good enough. If I have on Pesach a piece of bread falls into my soup, even b'mashehu, even a little bit, we assume the whole thing is going to be usher. Well, that's only by bread. That's only by real chametz. But over here where we're talking about something which is not chametz, it's just a chumrah on Pesach, so we would not assume that the rules are the same between chametz and between kidneys, because kidneys is not really part of the laws of chametz. So now, what exactly is included in this category of kidneys? Now that is something that is extremely unclear. The Chayei Adam wanted to institute in his days that potatoes, believe it or not, should be part of the category of kidneys. Can you imagine? What would we do? What would we do? My father always says, they call his sefer the Chayei Adam, they should call it the Kitzer Adam. He's trying to kill everybody. What would we do on Pesach if we weren't able to eat potatoes? And think about it, even worse than that. The Shari Tshuva, who's on the side of the page of Shulchan Aruch itself, the Shari Tshuva says in his time, they thought that coffee should be part of the Isser of Chametz on Pesach kidneys. Can you imagine that? So thank God we haven't accepted all of these ideas. But the question is, why have we not accepted them? So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in our Achayim Chelek Gimel, in his Shalos Tshuvas Igros Moshe, he writes that no, we have no reason to add on to the list of kidneys. Kidneys was difficult enough to accept as is. Kidneys is something that we don't really understand why we have it in the first place. And again, there was a lot of pushback at the time, and there were many who didn't accept it at all. And therefore, to go ahead and add nowadays new forms of kidneys and new items onto the list, that said, Rav Moshe is unacceptable. And therefore, Rav Moshe writes that we assume that potatoes are not on the list, and coffee is not on the list, and all these kinds of things that came later on are not on the list either. Now, Rav Moshe passed away, and 20 years after Rav Moshe's passing, we came up with this idea of quinoa. So my father said that the same way Rav Moshe said we should not add on to the list of kidneys, therefore my father feels that there's no reason to add quinoa onto the list. And my father is of the opinion that quinoa is able to be consumed on Pesach, because that would not be considered kidneys, even though it seems very similar to everything else, but he feels that quinoa we do not add on to the list later on, and therefore he feels that you are allowed to have. Now, Rav Asher Weiss and others have strongly disagreed with him. If you look at the other side of the page, Rav Asher wrote me a letter this week in which he expressed his opinion that he very strongly disagrees. However, in America, most of us probably follow Rav Moshe's Pesachim on many other things. I think we probably have a right to follow what Rav Moshe would probably say on this as well, and that is that we do not have a reason to add on to the list of kidneys that we already know about, and that is something that we should keep in mind. So forgetting about the quinoa and the other questionable items, what are the list of items that certainly are considered kidneys that we have all accepted? So I asked the OU for the list, and they sent me the following. If anyone wants to write this down, here's the list. So the list is beans. All beans are considered kidneys. Give everyone a second to find a place to write. We're good? Okay, everybody ready? Okay, so beans are considered on the list. I can make this much easier, and you can just go on the OU website. My mother-in-law sent me. It's all there. But okay. So beans, buckwheat, kasha, caraway seeds, cardamom. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Cardamom. Okay. Chickpeas, corn, fennel. I have no idea what that is.
It's a lettuce.
It's a lettuce? Okay. Fenugreek. Grains of paradise. Lentils. What? Grains of paradise. If you don't know what it is, it's good. Okay. Lentils, millet, mustard, peas. So far, so good?
Peanuts.
1 second. Peanuts is not on the list. Poppy seeds. Rapeseed. I don't know what rapeseed is. No, so someone told me there's grapeseed and there's rapeseed. Two different things. So this is without the G. Canola. Rice. So the question is, what about canola oil? Something which is a derivative. What? So this is a question. What about a derivative? So let's get through the list first, okay? So we didn't say peanuts yet. Rice, sesame seeds, snow... I didn't say peanuts yet. Snow peas, sorghum, I don't know what that is. Sorghum, thank you. You know, I wish you were there when I go to Gourmet Glot and I walk around the aisles and I have no idea what I'm looking for. Sugar snap peas, soybeans, sunflower seeds, all of those are considered to be kidneys. Now, everybody's talking about peanuts. What's the story with peanuts? Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses peanuts, and he says, as far as he's concerned, he thinks peanuts should not be considered part of the list. Why? Because peanuts are something which came along much later on in history. That was never around at the time that kidneys was instituted, and therefore Rav Moshe feels peanuts are not on the list. However, the OU does not give a hashgacha on peanuts because they feel that there are many who did accept peanuts to be part of kidneys. So again, if you have a child who only likes peanut butter sandwiches, I would certainly say go ahead and give them the peanut butter on Pesach. There's no question about it. Of course you're allowed to give it to them. What? I have a young child who likes very few items of food, and peanut butter is one of his things. I would say there's no question about it. You're allowed to give them peanut butter on Pesach if that's something... What? You won't find it? Really? Interesting. Okay. So again, as a matter of policy, the OU might not give a hechsher on peanuts just because it's such a disagreement. But at the same time, you look at the ingredients, I don't think there's any chametz in there. I don't think... If you hold like Rav Moshe that the peanuts are not part of kidneys, then I would assume you can use the peanut oil. Certainly, that's only a derivative of peanuts. It's further down. The canola has corn? Mm-hmm. So if it's corn, so it's corn. You got to look in the supermarket, whatever they have. I don't know. Okay, maybe we'll take the questions after, but let's just get through one last point. Okay, we'll get through one last point. So the last point we'll discuss is, it's a little bit similar, but not exactly the same. The last point we'll discuss is there are some who come from Hasidisha families who are careful not only on kidneys, but they took this 100 steps further and are makbid on Gebrux. Now, where does Gebrux come from? Now, Gebrux is something which not only did the Rishonim not hear of, not only did the Rambam and the Gemara not hear of, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah didn't hear about it either. It only came around in the 1700s. This was the Mezritcha Magid. So this is very later on in history. And it's something that if you think kidneys wasn't accepted by half of Klal Yisrael, Gebrux wasn't even accepted by half of the half. Right? Because again, we have Ashkenazim and Sephardim. The Sephardim never accepted kidneys. Of the Ashkenazic Jews, the only ones who came up with the idea of Gebrux are the Hasidim. So forget about everybody else. Only the Hasidim accepted the Minhag of Gebrux. So where does Gebrux come from? This is something that is hard to justify, where the meaning of Gebrux come from. So some say the concern is, the Pri Chadosh says, maybe the concern of Gebrux is as follows, that we're going to bake the matzahs. And the problem is sometimes in your matzah you have a little pouch that's left, you know, from the baking, you have a little air bubble inside. And maybe there's going to be some flour that's going to be stuck in there, which is so improbable. But maybe you're going to have some flour that's stuck in there. If you're going to take the matzah and crush it up and throw it into your soup, there's going to be flour that's going to touch the soup. You're going to have chametz. I mean, the concern is so far-fetched. And certainly nowadays, when we have people who look through every matzah when they sell it to you, and if there's any concern about the matzah that they're giving you, it doesn't go in the box. I don't know if anyone here has ever been to a matzah bakery, but they don't just give you every matzah that comes out. Anything that's even slightly questionable, they right away throw it to the side. They don't put it in the box. So to really assume that there's a problem of gebrux is something that's a very far concern. Again, we shouldn't be mezalzel in the minhag. We shouldn't make fun of it. I'm just saying, if you look at the Gemara says clearly, listen to this Gemara, I forgot to put it on. The Gemara says, in Pesachim daf lamites, Eilu dvarim, these are the things, she'ein ba'in lidei chimutz, that will never come to be chametz. Says the Gemara, ha'afui, something that is already baked, can never turn into chametz. End of story. So the Gemara says that gebrux is not chametz, ever, and it will never turn into chametz. So the Gemara says clearly that there's no such thing as gebrux. So again, as we said, it came along in the 1700s, and Mizrich and Magid came along with this idea that we should be machmir on gebrux. So this is something that the Vilna Gaon, who was very opposed to Hasidus in general, was opposed to gebrux as well. And I think they say about the Vilna Gaon that he used to put a knedel in his window the whole Pesach to show everybody how opposed he was to the minhag of gebrux, and he didn't believe in this whole idea that was started by the Hasidim. Now, the question is always raised. The question is always raised. So what happens, and with this we'll close. So what happens when you have somebody who marries into a family, the same way we spoke about somebody who marries into a family that eats kidney. So what do I do if I marry into a family that eats gebrux? So this is something that happens all the time. So again, my father talks about the story that he had a friend, my father, when he was in yeshiva 50 years ago. So I would imagine that there weren't many people who learned, who went to Israel for the year to learn. That was not in style. And even if you had enough money to go and you went, you didn't come home for Yontif. You certainly didn't come home for Pesach. You went and you stayed. My father, when he was 28, was planning on going because he hadn't yet gotten married and he didn't know what he was going to do. And he decided to, he wanted to go to Israel. And he told his parents, if I meet a girl there, I'll get married and I'll let you know. Like, that was the assumption. Nobody had money. Nobody was able to fly all over the place. So the assumption was you're going to go and you'll figure out your way. So my father had a friend who went to Israel, and he had no, it's not like now where we have so many relatives and friends and acquaintances that we could go to for Yontif. Somebody who was in Israel, if they knew one person, they were lucky, they could go to for Pesach. The problem was the only person that this person knew was somebody who ate gebrux, or somebody who ate whatever it was on Pesach. So what are you going to do? So he called Rav Soloveitchik to ask, do I need a hataras nedarim? Because this year I have no choice. I don't know anybody else. I have no one else who's going to host me for Pesach. What am I going to do? Rav Soloveitchik said a hataras nedarim would not be necessary because it's not that you want to get rid of your minhag forever. You want to get rid of your minhag because under extenuating circumstances, this year you have nowhere to go for Pesach. You have nobody to eat by. The only person that's willing to have you is somebody who eats gebrux. So this year that's meaning a minhag, when we take it upon ourselves, is binding like a neder. So a neder only applies under certain conditions. We assume you never took the neder upon yourself had you known that you would be in this kind of circumstance. So therefore, we assume that a hataras nedarim, Rav Soloveitchik was under the impression that if it's a one-time thing, you would never have to make a hataras nedarim for that because it's just extenuating circumstances that call for you to act in such a way. And therefore, we would assume there would be no problem to do so for 1 year. But what if a person knows, this is what I'm going to have to do every time? So what do? I have to be by my in-laws every year. They eat kebrux. What should I do? Now, by me, it's the opposite. I do eat kebrux. My in-laws are a big chassidim. They don't eat anything. You know, the first time I went to my in-laws for Pesach, I didn't know what hit me. There were no plates on the table, no anything. They have napkins that they put the matzah in. I was like, what's going on here? So it was very interesting. So we shouldn't be mezalzel in the minhagim. Everything has a beautiful place in halacha. But again, some people take kebrux very seriously. So I saw the following very fascinating story. And this story is about the Av Beis Din of Pressburg, who had a son-in-law who was a chassid. And the Av Beis Din of Pressburg has this son-in-law who's now engaged to his daughter, and he invites him over for Pesach. And the son-in-law has no idea what he's going to do. My family is Machben on gebrux. My father-in-law, who's the Av Beis Din of Pressburg from the family of the Chassam Sofer, who's not Machben on gebrux, what do I do? So he goes to the Chabina Rav, to the Dovid Meisharim, and he asks him, what do you suggest I do? I'm going to go to my in-laws' house. They are not Machben on gebrux. My family is, so what should I do this year? So the Chabina Rav came up with something which is so brilliant. It's amazing what he came up with. He said, the Gemara tells us, totally out of left field, He says, the Gemara tells us that when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, so we don't fast on Shabbos, what do? We're doch on Sunday. So as we know, we're a little bit more lenient when it's a Tisha B'Av Shenidcha. When Tisha B'Av falls out on the 10th of Av, it's not the same as when Tisha B'Av falls out on the 9th of Av. So the Gemara tells us a story that Elazar B'Rab Tzadok, he was one of the greats in the times of the Gemara, so Rabbi Elazar B'Rab Tzadok said, Ani mibnei Sana'a ben Binyamin. I am a descendant of the family of Sana'a ben Binyamin. Okay, Sana'a from the Shevet of Binyamin, very nice. And when Tisha B'Av fell out on Sunday one year, we did not fast that year. What do you mean? It's Tisha B'Av. Why didn't you fast? So the Gemara says, because it was a family holiday on Yud Ba'av every year. Something special happened, it was a family holiday, and Tisha B'Av can't come in the way and trump our family holiday. So again, you can't have a family holiday on Tisha B'Av itself. They had a family holiday on Yud Ba'av. Happens to be this year, Tisha B'Av was pushed off till Yud Ba'av, and Rabbi Elazar B'Rab Tzadok said, since I'm part of the family of Sana'i ben Binyamin, therefore I do not have to fast on Tisha B'Av the same way the rest of the family doesn't. Ask the Tosus a question in Maseches Erevin. We have a Gemara in Bechoris that tells us that Rabbi Elazar B'Rab Tzadok was a Kohen. What Shevet is a Kohen from? Shevet Levi. So how can you tell me you're part of Shevet Binyamin, and that's why you didn't fast on Tisha B'Av, because you have a family holiday? Doesn't the Gemara tell us you're a Kohen? You're from Shevet Levi. So how's it possible? The answer is, says Tosus, he married in. And once you marry in, you're part of the family. And once you're part of the family, you don't have to fast on Tisha B'Av because this is a family holiday. Said the Chabini Rav, what you see from here is, once you marry in, you're part of the family and you don't have to be careful about kibbutz anymore. An amazing story. How do you like that? So he says, it doesn't mean that you should get rid of it, but it means when you're by your in-law's house, that's what you do. So too over here. If Rabbi Elazar B'Rab Tzadok considered himself to be part of the family enough that he's one of the insiders, well then that would allow him also to say that he wouldn't have to be makbid on the kibbutz when he went to his father-in-law, the Alvez, in a Pressburg again. This is something that is asked every single year. I would suggest not making a machlokas out of it, not getting in a fight over such an issue. However, the minig of kidneys is something we should try to be more careful about than gebrucks. Kidneys is something which is much dates back much further than the minig of gebrucks, and therefore kidneys is something that we try our best. Again, if it's a shas adchak, for example, somebody's sick, or somebody has a whole family that's getting together, and you're the only one that's not going to be able to, obviously then a shas adchak would be makel and allow you to eat from, not to eat kidneys itself, but to eat from the pots that cook kidneys. However, if you can avoid it, you should try your best to do so. I wish everyone a wonderful day. Yeah.
So is there an Easter of Tarubish kidneys?
Let me just stop this. One second, how do I stop this?